Welcome to another episode of Mini Fellowship in Movement Disorders, where we take most challenging concepts in movement disorders and simplify them into easy-to-follow explanations. I'm your host, Danish Bahati, a movement disorder neurologist who loves to teach physicians online, especially in the developing countries.
Wonderful case by Injad and great discussion by everyone. Especially I enjoyed reading the description by Ahmed on this case, very well written description. So before I talk about the case, I do want to take up this opportunity to talk about the psychogenicity and psychogenic movement disorders. I'm sure it will come again later on in some other modules, but it will be worth repeating. So rule number one is that psychogenic movement disorder is a positive diagnosis. What I mean by that is that it's not a diagnosis of exclusion. It's not that you evaluate and you cannot come up with a diagnosis and you say, okay, then it has to be psychogenic movement disorder, or it is something that looks like that you something you have not seen before, or it's something that all the tests come back as negative or normal, and you're saying, okay, maybe it's psychogenic movement disorder. That is not true. You have to have positive features that are supportive of a psychogenic movement disorder to give that diagnosis. So that's the rule number one. So whenever you say psychogenic movement disorder, you have to defend why you think it's a psychogenic movement disorder. Rule number two, the first year movement disorder fellows in my program are not allowed to give anyone a diagnosis of psychogenic movement disorder. It's to try to correct this habit that we develop in neurology in general, is to easily jump onto the diagnosis of psychogenicity. I think the psychogenic presentations in neurology are fairly common. It range anywhere from as low as 10% in movement disorders to as high as 35% in epilepsy cases and stroke in between there. But I think the differential diagnosis includes psychogenic movement disorder or psychogenic disorder in neurology far more than these expected presentation. So if it's 10%, 1 in 10 cases, and half of the cases people are adding psychogenic movement disorder as their differential, then they're really overthinking it and overcalling it. So my first job is to make sure that I try to correct everyone so that even though this could be a psychogenic movement disorder case that you're seeing, you should force yourself to say, what could it be if it is not psychogenic movement disorder? And let me assume for the sake of debate and evaluation, and really to convince yourself, you have to prove it over and over and over again with various reasoning and logic why it has to be psychogenic movement disorder and not an organic disorder. So these are the two rules that you must abide by. So I would actually prefer answers as an organic disorder, even when actually I can see that the patient has a psychogenic movement disorder. So I would actually prefer someone to look at this video and call it a dystonic tremor rather than a psychogenic tremor or a functional tremor, even though if I finally think after reviewing the videos that it actually is a psychogenic tremor, I would still prefer that my trainees and my participants and students actually think about dystonic tremors first and foremost before they think about a psychogenic etiology. By the way, when I say that psychogenic movement disorder is a positive diagnosis, there is actually very well-written book by Dr. Mark Hellett, who is the world leader in psychogenic movement disorder and physiology of movement disorders. He's a researcher and an expert at NIH, National Institute of Health in USA in Bethesda, Maryland. And in his book, he actually gives 17 criteria for considering a movement disorder as a psychogenic movement disorders. I usually don't remember all 17 on the top of my head, but I'm able to come up with the right ones in the right patients most of the time. I can tell you a few of them. I think some of them were mentioned earlier. So distractibility. Distractibility is a feature of a movement when you do something, you ask the patient to do something else and it distracts and takes away that movement, abnormal movement. Now, before I go on and give you some other examples, I want to make sure that one of these features alone is not enough to consider psychogenic movement disorders. I think Dr. Hellett has given a minimum number required, which I don't remember, and I don't use that rule or formula. But the point is that distractibility can make certain movements go away and make you falsely think of this as a distractible movement. So for example, ticks can easily be distractible. So you can have them focus on other tasks and their ticks will go away. Stereotypies are easily distractible. Many mannerisms and behaviors are distractible. The resting tremor will go away if someone is doing something else with that hand and task. And sometimes even movements like myoclonus and dystonia will go away during distraction randomly, not every single time, but some of the time. So you can be thrown and think that, oh, because it was distracted in that one task that the patient did that is psychogenic, it has to be distractible a lot more frequently, and then other features of psychogenic movement disorders are present. Some other features will be what is called entrainment. Entrainment is a feature where you can make the abnormal movement follow the rhythm of some other movement. So for example, if they're having a tremor in the left hand, you have them open and close the right hand, and the left hand tremor frequency starts matching the frequency of hand opening and closing on the right hand, and you can make the right hand movements go fast, go slow, and the hand tremor will follow that. Another feature will be lack of overflow worsening. Many movement disorders will get worsened when patient gets in a motor hypermotor state or a excitable state, hypermotor excitable state. So foot dystonia, for example, will worsen if the patient is doing vigorous movements with his hand, like hand opening, closing. And similarly, hand dystonias get worse during walking, during foot tapping, and so on and so forth. And if you see lack of that, similarly, disconcordance. So if something is supposed to happen with that movement in a certain situation, it's not happening. For example, so a dystonic movement or dystonic tremor usually have a null point. So if you see that the dystonic movement gets worse on both directions, so if it's a wrist flexion movement, but flexion of the wrist and extension of the wrist both makes a tremor worse or both makes a tremor better, then that is not in concordance with what you expect with a dystonic movement, and so on and so forth. So each movement will be different. So for example, a resting tremor should go away with action. So if a resting tremor is not going away with action, that's a disconcordance movement. Again, individually, it can mean many things. So a dystonic tremor can have be an apparent rest tremor, and it will not go away with action, will convert into an action tremor. Similarly, sometimes reemergence tremor of the resting tremor are so fast that the pause in between going away with action and then reemerging in between action as a postural tremor may not be very visible, and it appears as if the resting tremor is not going away with action. So there's a lot of minutiae or details to it, but they are general rules. So it goes on and on, these 17 points. So some of the points are in history. For example, if the movements spontaneously resolve or they resolve after starting a new treatment for a short while and then they come back, if the movements have a waxing and waning quality, so the movements happen for a while, then the patient gets tired or exhausted and the movements get better, and then the movements come back again. If the tremor change in frequency, so we know the most tremor do not change in frequency. They have the same frequency every time, but if the frequency is changing. Similarly, if a tremor is changing direction, so most tremors don't change direction. They always have the same direction to it. But if the tremor is in jerk towards the flexion and then changes into a jerk towards the extension, so on and so forth. I'll see if I can find that list of 17 abnormalities consistent with psychogenic movement disorder. I know someone asked me from the last year about that list, and I finally went to my library, picked up that book, took a picture and shared it in the Slack last year in a different workspace at that time. But I'll see if I can find it again and share it, or if someone from last year's who has joined this channel still has a copy of that list picture that I sent, kindly re-upload it and share with everyone. And then, you know, I'll now give comments to the patient's video.